Welcome to the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, Live the Big Stuff podcast with New York Times bestselling author, Christine Carlson. Chris shares don't sweat wisdom to help you achieve greater mental health, self-compassion, and better communication with family, friends, and coworkers. Listen in and learn simple ways to live your most vibrant life of joy.
Hi, and welcome back to the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, Live the Big Stuff podcast. This is Christine Carlson. Before we begin with our interview today, I would love to take you on a golden pause as usual. So let's go ahead and close our eyes if you can. If not, just do this as a deep breathing exercise and get really present in your breath and in your body. Oh, crap. Did you hear that? Did you hear that? It's 11 o'clock. I'm going to start over. I only hear that maybe, but I'm wondering if it's on the recording. So I'm going to go ahead and start over. All right. Hi, and welcome back to Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, Live the Big Stuff podcast. This is Christine Carlson. Well, before we begin with our wonderful interview today, let's go ahead and take our golden pause together. So wherever you are, sit comfortably if you can. And if not, just use this as a deep breathing exercise to get really present in your breath, in your body, and just doing whatever it is you're doing, whether you're gardening or you're cooking a meal or you're out for a hike. But if you can, sit comfortably in a chair, uncross your legs, and or sit on the floor Indian style, but place your palms open on your lap and close your eyes and just begin to breathe with me, please. Just breathing in through your nose, allowing your chest and your belly to fully expand. Taking in the fullness of your breath, exhaling, releasing, and relaxing. And breathing in pure golden sunlight to the top of your head, to the tips of your fingers and your toes. On the exhale, just release, relax, let go. Breathing in pure golden sunlight through your core, through your heart, through your mind. On the exhale, just allow yourself to let go of what doesn't serve you well. Just let it go. And breathing in pure golden sunlight to every cell of your being. Place your hand on your heart, activating your heart, opening your heart, and spend a moment thinking of one thing you feel grateful for. And as you fill your heart with that beautiful golden gratitude, just allow it to permeate your entire being with joy. Breathing in pure golden gratitude to the top of your head, to the tips of your fingers and your toes. Just continue to exhale, release, and relax a little bit deeper. And breathing in pure golden gratitude through your core, through your heart, through your mind. On the exhale, just allow yourself to sink inward into that beautiful feeling of peace and joy. And this time, as you breathe in pure golden gratitude to every cell of your being, on the exhale, allow that gratitude to wash over you like a cascading waterfall of pure joy. And breathing in pure golden gratitude again to every cell of your being. On the exhale, allow it to wash over you again like a cascading waterfall of pure joy. Taking one last deep breath in, filling your entire being, every cell of your being with golden gratitude. On the exhale, go ahead and open your eyes. All right, well, here we are today. We are in the final interview and episode of our connection series. It's just been a wonderful series. I think I could go on and talk about connection. However, we will switch to a new topic next week. So I would love to share this wonderful woman with you, Edie Weinstein. She's a licensed social worker, psychotherapist, journalist, interfaith minister, author, speaker, PR and marketing professional, as well as the founder of Hug Momsters Armed with Love, which offers free hugs on the planned and spontaneous basis. Edie offered her first TED Talk called Overcoming the Taboo of Touch as a way of helping people meet Skin Hunger, and Overcome Disconnection and Loneliness. You can find Dee Dee at www.opti-mystical.com. Welcome, Edie.
Hi, this is wonderful to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was so wonderful to hear about the work that you've been doing. And I thought, what a great way to end this series on connection by talking about how important community is, how important touch is, and also to share your story about how Hug Mobsters came about. So let's start there, Edie. I'd love to hear, how did Hug Mobsters come about? And then we'll just chat all about your adventures with Hug Mobsters, armed with love.
Wonderful. Thank you. So we can roll back even farther than that to my childhood. I grew up in a very nurturing, affectionate family. My mom, my dad, my sister, and I. And on various and sundry occasions, each grandmother, and then a cousin. So our house was always filled. When friends would come to visit, there would always be hugs on the way in and out. Very touchy-feely, nurturing family. And it never occurred to me that not everybody grew up like that. That, you know, I had friends that would tell me, oh no, we don't do that in my house, but I'm glad to come to your house and experience it. So in February of 2014, I decided to bring a group of friends together at 30th Street Station in Philadelphia, which is a big train station, for a Free Hugs flash mob. Now, I didn't create the Free Hugs movement. It was created by a gentleman, I think in Australia, called himself Juan Mann, J-U-A-N-M-A-N-N, which I think was a pseudonym for one man. And I decided to do it that weekend because I wanted people to understand that Valentine's Day wasn't just one day. We did it the day after Valentine's Day. And I wanted people to remember that Valentine's Day isn't just about romantic relationships. Love is for everybody. So between the 12 of us, we estimated that within an hour's time, we hugged about 200 people. One of them was a gentleman who was an Iraq war vet who approached us. And he said he was the only survivor of his platoon, and he had survivor's guilt. And he said, I thought about ending my life until I met you people. Can I join you? So, of course, you know, tears streaming down, we gave him his own sign, and he was off hugging people. Now, all these years, you know, 10 years later, I have no clue what happened to him. I'm praying that he found a new, you know, new purpose and meaning for his life. And maybe he's doing his own Hug Mobsters thing somewhere in the world. So my thought was, hugs save lives. And I didn't realize how prescient that was, you know, ominous that was, because in a few months, like 5 months later, June 12th of 2014, on the way home from the gym, and I was only 55 years old, I had a heart attack.
Oh my gosh.
I had all the symptoms that women typically have, which was palpitations, lightheadedness, dizziness, jaw pain and tightness, torrential sweats, searing heartburn pain. And workaholic that I was, I didn't go straight to the hospital. I came home, called my office where I was working as a therapist for outpatient drug and alcohol rehab. And I said, I'm not feeling very well. Can you cancel my clients for me? And I still didn't call 911. I had the phone in my hand, still didn't call 911. Got back in the car, drove to the hospital, which is only 10 minutes away. So I justified it, you know. And I stumbled in and said, I think I'm having a heart attack. So an hour or so and one stent later, I'm now what I call the bionic woman. You know, I don't know whether it's a bionic body part, but it's it's keeping my artery open. So as part of my cardiac rehab, I did a lot of walking. And I walked through my little town of Doylestown, Pennsylvania, about an hour outside of Philly. And I thought, why don't I combine the hugging with the walking? Now, friends had started calling us hug mobsters, you know, flash mob, hug mob. And I said, ooh, mobsters, guns, drugs, I don't think so.
Was this post-pandemic?
No, this is 2014.
This is pre-pandemic.
2014.
Yeah.
Plays into this.
It's 2019. Yeah.
So I added the tagline, armed with love. So, you know, make it warmer and fuzzier. And I started gathering friends together, some of the same friends that were there at the initial gathering, and sometimes new friends. And then there were times when I would just have the signs in my car and I would just go out and do it by myself. And during my time doing this prior to the pandemic, I've hugged throughout the United States, in Canada, and then in May of 2018, I hugged my way across Ireland. I had my sign and it was just remarkable. And I've had encounters with people where they've said how much they really needed that because they had experienced losses and they were feeling lonely. So fast forward to the pandemic and everything shut down. And my big fear was, oh my gosh, what if we will never be able to hug again? And I'm not prone to depression, but that threw me into a major, I started having these dreams about the pandemic. And one of them, we were able to hug again, but back to back or back to front, like spooning. And I started having these, these ideas of doing, free hugs, virtual strolls. So I would walk through town with my mask on and I would see people and I'd say, would you like a virtual hug? And usually they'd say yes. So they said, well, what is that? So I said, you hold your arms. We can try it now. If you can put your arms around yourself. Okay. And then just give yourself a hug as if we're hugging. Okay. And you don't catch anything. No, you don't catch cooties that way. You just catch the love. So I started doing some of them on Zoom. And that was fun. And then as we got closer to the time when people could more safely be out and about, I've started doing them again publicly. And knock wood, been healthy, except for this. I apologize for the sultry voice. This is not my voice. And I was telling you before our call that what prompted my getting in touch with you was watching your Lifetime show movie from a couple of years ago, and you were about to do an interview with Oprah, you lost your voice.
Yeah.
And I went, oh no, history repeating itself. So again, I apologize.
No problem. You sound great. You sound fine.
Thank you. So that's how it began, how Hug Mobsters began. And I've done them at a lot of Pride Fests throughout my area. I've done them at sporting events. I've done like 5K races. Where else?
That's beautiful. And I think what you're really...
Arts festivals, you know.
Seems like what you're really addressing is something I read in your own bio or your own, a piece of writing that you sent me was the epidemic of loneliness. Do you want to talk a little bit about the statistics of that and what you found in your work around that?
Yep. I forget what year it was. In 2020, last year, the Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, said that we are now in an epidemic of loneliness, partially because of the pandemic, but even before that, we're so used to being online. A lot of people, you're out in public, their heads are down on their phones. They don't make eye contact. A lot of people live alone. A lot of people are empty nesters. Their children have moved away. A lot of people have lost loved ones during the pandemic. A lot of people died. And as a therapist, I work with folks that experience depression, anxiety, suicidality, and addiction, in part because they're lonely. That's, that connection is missing. There's just something that's not being fulfilled. And what does he say? Okay, here we go. Yeah, here's some statistics. He said loneliness increases the risk of premature death by 26% and isolation by 29%.
And I think what's interesting is that it doesn't have to be that way, but that you're right. We have technology and we think of technology as being connecting us through the web and so forth, but you're so right about that. If we don't have etiquette that we follow as a culture, when you gather with a group, just putting your phone away for that 2 hours, not having your phone out at all. I actually have just naturally started doing that. some of the people closest to me, my boyfriend, friends, and family accused me of not keeping my cell phone with me enough. And I'm like, well, I do that intentionally because I've already noticed that if I have my cell phone with me, then I'm not living in the present moment.
Right.
And it's very distracting from life that's actually happening in the present moment. And so mm-hmm. I intentionally don't have my cell phone with me much of the right. time because I figure an emergency is still going, you know, it's not going to be, I'm in touch enough where I'll still catch everything mm-hmm. I need to catch. You know what I mean? Like I'm not going to miss anything major, but I don't want to be tied to my technology in that way. And I've never, ever turned on my notifications with Facebook, Instagram, or any of the social mm-hmm. media, because I'm like, I don't want to know every time some person is on my social media. That would be pinging me. It'd make me nervous and anxious, and it'd drive me nuts, you know? So I think that that's a very wise statement that you made about technology. And I don't think we really consider that people have their cell phones and they feel like they're going to use that as connection, but it's actually making them more lonely.
Right. Well, it also depends. I mean, it was a godsend during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Zoom
especially, like the way, you know, it was a little bit shocking to me how transitional it could be to do retreats and so forth on Zoom, and how they still mm-hmm. were incredibly transformational and connecting, because so much of connection happens with our words and our emotions and the feelings mm-hmm. that we present, and that can mm-hmm. come through. It can come through the camera, especially if it's facilitated in that kind of way.
Right. So it definitely helped get me through it. My grandson, my first grandchild, was born in January of 2020. It was the best thing that happened to our family that year. And I was there almost every day.
But that was right at the beginning of
that was before.
Yeah,
that was
right before the pandemic.
And then
yeah.
the middle of March, boom, everything shut down. And if you can imagine, you know, when your first grandchild was born, not being able to snuggle him, not being able to hold him for 11 weeks.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I was grateful that we could do FaceTime. I mean, he didn't know. He was just a tiny little thing. But I would create videos for him where I would sing to him. I had much, you know.
I bet you must be the most snuggly grandmother.
Oh, absolutely. So, but interestingly, okay, and this is an important topic too, because we're branching off a little bit, is children. Oh, so anyway, during the pandemic, being able to connect with him by sending him videos, by doing FaceTime, really helped to get me through until I was able to hold him again. And when we're talking about children and affection and nurturing touch, when you and I grew up, you know, we weren't taught boundaries for the most part. We were taught if a grown-up wants to hug you, you need to hug them, number one, out of respect, or number two, because you'll hurt their feelings. We teach my grandchildren, and now I have a granddaughter as well. Dean is 4, Lucy's almost 2. They don't have to hug anybody, including the family, if they don't want to. So when I'm leaving, we do childcare in their home. I take the morning shift, and then my daughter-in-law's family takes the next shift, and then I go to work. But on the way out the door, I'll say, would you like a hug? And Dean will either say no, and I'll say, okay, see you tomorrow. And then he'll come running over and jump on me, you know.
I love that. I try. I'm a big hugger as well. Like I love to hug and touch people, but I always ask permission.
Oh yeah.
Before I always say, "Are you open to hugs?" You know,
yeah,
that's
absolutely
how I do it, and yeah. I don't just immediately, because it is. It's a little bit. It's you can't assume that everyone is mm-hmm. comfortable
yeah.
with that proximity or that yeah. kind of touch, and especially
yeah.
children.
Yeah.
Children, it's really
yeah.
powerful to teach children those boundaries with yeah. adults that they can say, no, yeah. I don't want you to touch me. You know, I don't want to hug you.
Right. Right. But like I said, as long as he knows he has a choice, he'll almost always hug me before I head out the door. And Lucy is like a little monkey. She'll jump and, you know, she again is almost 2. And so we think that they're going to grow up affectionate kids, but knowing it's by choice.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Let's talk a little bit about your TED Talk and how you, how, you know, the whole taboo of touch. Let's talk about that topic a little bit, because I think touch is such a beautiful way to connect. And it's such an incredible way to connect.
So the TED, the idea for the TED Talk actually occurred when I was in grad school in the 1980s. And I did a paper called Counseling Practitioners' Views on Using Touch as a Therapeutic Modality. Because most therapists, and I'm a licensed social worker, were taught you're not supposed to touch your clients. You certainly don't want to hug them because it was considered unprofessional. It was considered boundary crossing. And when I did the paper, I interviewed 26 of my colleagues, you know, people that I was going to grad school with, and asked them about their opinions of it. And then I did some delving into touch studies. And what I remember from back then is that most of them said under certain circumstances with consent that they would touch their clients. So when I first saw my initial very first TED Talk was Elizabeth Gilbert, and she was talking about creativity. Have you ever seen that one?
I have. Yeah, it's really good.
And I've seen it a gazillion times. And I said, I'm going to do that. Now, when I set an intention, it usually happens. So I submitted the idea, you know, numerous places, nothing. In 2020 maybe or 2021, a friend of mine did a TED Talk, and this was during the pandemic, so she recorded it from her home. And I said, well, how did you, you know, how did that happen? She said, I want to introduce you to my coach. So his name is Cesar Cervantes, and he's a comic, and he's done 3 TED Talks. So she said, you need to talk to him. So we set up an appointment. We started working together. He helped me pitch. He helped me hone the talk. And then about a year after that, I did the talk. And I'm not prone to stage fright, but it was one of the very few times in my life that I had stage fright.
Oh my gosh. I know, it's really nerve wracking. I've done one TED Talk. I'd like to do another one sometime, but same thing. I mean, I don't really get nervous, but I was nervous for my TED Talk for sure.
Being on the stage, I wasn't nervous, but the memorization of it, for those that don't know, it's not improv.
You have to do it. And you also have to do it in such a very specific time. So,
So that, you know, that made me nervous. But once I got on stage, it was great. It was fun. And then after the talk, you know, there was like a reception line, like at a wedding. And I was standing there and everybody wanted to hug me. They said, oh, can I have a hug? Can I have a hug? You know, so it was remarkable. So again, it's called Overcoming the Taboo of Touch.
And is that what about the hug mobsters?
I talked a little bit about hug mobsters, but I talked about the health benefits of, you know, of touch. And I talked about what happens if people don't get enough nurturing touch.
Well, let's talk about the health benefits of touch, because that's a great place to really go back to the whole connection piece. And I always think that's so powerful. I think that's why we touch, you know, like it's because it's really natural to hold out, you know, your hands and to touch somebody's arm when you're talking to them or, you know, and then there's, of course, all the other kinds of touches, too. So,
Okay. As you had mentioned earlier, we have skin hunger that's just as important to meet as food hunger. There have been studies about babies in orphanages who don't get enough nurturing touch because the staff to child ratio is, you know, you might have one adult caring for a dozen children, and the babies fail to thrive because they're not getting enough nurturing touch. Well, adults do too. It just looks different. For adults, it looks like, again, depression, anxiety, addiction, suicidality, aggression. And when people get enough nurturing touch, you know, you did that, the meditation in the beginning, it feels like that. It calms, you know, the nervous system. It helps people feel connected to the folks in their lives. It helps them feel less alone in the world. It lowers the blood pressure, slows the heart rate. People learn better if they're getting enough nurturing touch.
So that's some probably of those a great reason why adult, like the elderly should live with families, you know what I mean? Because His kids are so amazing at just jumping on your lap and giving you hugs and touching you. And, you know, and it's one of the reasons why I love to be around my grandkids so much is because there's never a shortage of any touch. And my puppy too, he's like that too. He's always, he always wants to cuddle and snuggle. And I think pets are amazing. They're not a replacement for human touch, but they are also really, really nurturing as far as like, you know, loneliness goes.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned elders. I worked in two different nursing homes as a social worker, and with consent, we were encouraged to touch the residents. You know, we would always ask them, would you like a hug? Can I hold your hand? Can I, you know, massage lotion into your hands? So that was helpful. And there are some nursing homes, I think I saw an article or video about nursing homes that are near a daycare center so that the elders can have visits from little kids.
That's so sweet.
And, so I think that that's important. And I did a free hug stroll, I think 3 years after my heart attack, was on South Street in Philadelphia. And there was this Muslim woman wearing a hijab. And I asked her if she would like a hug. And she said, of course I would like a hug. And I said, well, she said, who wouldn't want a hug? And I said, some people don't. She says, even those who say they don't want one, they need them. And the friend that was a videographer was following me, and she's this woman is on there. So yeah, even if we don't want one, we might need one, but it's at your discretion. I hug my clients. You know, I have clients that come to my office for hugs that they, you know, they know that at the end of the session, there'll be a hug. So it's helpful for me. It's helpful for them. And, you know, it definitely bonds us. There's more of a sense of trust. Now, I don't hug my child clients unless they ask for it. I know like if I have an adult client who's crying and I'm my office is set up so that I'm sort of, I have a rolling chair. I can move over to where they are and I'll say, would you like a hug? But I won't, you know, I'll be very careful with my child clients unless they've given absolute consent.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, Edie, tell me about what you're promoting right now, what you might want to share with our audience today.
Yeah, there's an amazing movie, like 13 International Film Festival Awards. And the film is called Angels and Saints - Eros, like love, Eros and awe.
E-R-O-S.
E-R-O-S, like sensual love, sexual love, and awe. And it was created by two documentary filmmakers in Philadelphia, Vic Comfer, who's a retired social worker, and Rodney Wittenberg, who is an Emmy Award winning music producer, music composer. And I've known Rodney, I don't know, 25 years or more. And I was asked to do PR for this film because I'm an interfaith minister. I've also done sex education. So what the film is about is how we're taught, most of us, that sexuality is on one side, spirituality is on the other, and never the twain shall meet. Mm. And yet we are sensual / sexual beings, and we are spiritual beings. We are created by some kind of creator, regardless of what your religious beliefs are. So the film was came out 3 years ago and is now available to be viewed all over the world. We show it at various professional, like social work conferences, therapist conferences, as you know, relationship conferences, as well as spiritual events. We did, there's a church called MCC, Metropolitan Community Church, and they're all over the world, and they are LGBTQ affirming. So the film was available for all of their congregations all over the world to watch. And this was Valentine's week. And then we've got another one coming up in the Philadelphia area next weekend at a New Thought Church. So we're always looking for places to screen the film. Rodney usually does music, his own music. There's one piece in there that he wrote for the film called Angels and Saints. And the first time I heard it, I said, why does that remind me of David Bowie? And he said, because that was the inspiration, was very much in the style of David Bowie. So if you want to check out the website, it's ASEA, which is Angel Saints Aerosol, ASEAfilm.com. I'm going to double check just to be sure.
Well, that sounds very, that sounds beautiful. The intersection between spirituality and your sensuality or your sexuality. Mm-hmm. That sounds amazing. I mean, yeah. it is so weird and strange that we don't connect the two of those. I mean, really, honestly, I think as an expression of love, your sexuality is, it's one of the greatest expressions, right? I mean, it's also, I mean, your sexuality is very alive, and we are in this three-dimensional world and form to be alive. So I know like a lot of widows are confused by their feelings of sexuality after they've been widowed. And you know, they don't understand if they love their husband so much, how they could want to have another partner or how they could be that woman with another man. And I'm like, well, it's pretty obvious that you need to live, you know, and it is one of the most alive things you can do is, and also it goes back to our story about touch and how important it is to touch and the human, we need that as human beings. We need to be held. We need to be loved. We need to be touched. And so it's not a mystery to me how they go hand in hand.
Not me either. I was widowed 26 years ago.
I remember that.
Right. And like you, I've had relationships in between, but never remarried. And, you know, I don't mean for this to sound crass, but even when your partner dies, you haven't died.
No.
Your sense of aliveness, your sense of sexuality, that's still alive.
Oh, and depending upon what your age is, it could even open you up even more. I mean, I remember how different I was. I was a widow at 43. So I was very young and kind of in the prime of my sexuality. Mm-hmm. And so it was a very, I was just, I thought it was a very odd time to be widowed, you know, and yet it was also a very beautiful time for me to discover a whole new part of myself and a whole new way to express myself sexually. Yeah. Then I would have in my marriage even. So it was, it, you know, it can be a very beautiful, you know, extension of who you are if you're willing to explore it and to look at it that way. It's just it's part of the human, you know, the human life. Like I think I'm, this is off topic, but I often think of so many of the people that are taking Ozempic and stuff and all the side effects they have and they don't want to eat. And I'm thinking, I don't want to take Ozempic, even if it would help me lose weight, because I love eating so much.
It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. And sure, if you have a real reason, if you have a super reason to lose weight for your health, by all means, there's a true reason to do it. But for just to lose weight or whatever, 10 pounds or whatever, you know, no, I'm just like, I'd love to lose 10 pounds, but not at the expense of my pleasure.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Well, I was 3 years younger than you. I was widowed at 40.
Oh, wow.
And I had a similar experience where I started exploring Tantra.
Tantra is very much the inner section of spirituality and sex.
Sexuality, and it made a huge difference. And as a result of that, I enlarged my community of, you know, people that I, you know, that I've come to love, either as lovers or as, you know, as friends. And all these years later, they're still part of my circles of people. So regardless of the age, I mean, you and I are in our 60s now, and that part of you doesn't have to die either.
No, it changes. I mean, it definitely isn't driven by hormones for me, but it's more that need to be close, that need to, you know, that need to express yourself that way, but not, it's not driven in the same way as it was when I was younger, for sure. It's more of an intimacy thing now.
Because I was listening to, before this, I was listening to your interview with Mark, the dating coach, the relationship.
Yeah, that was funny.
And
that was a good conversation.
That was good. Yeah, I would have, you know, if there was more time, it would be interesting to have found out how he works with, you know, women of a certain age and being, you know, being out there dating again in your 60s, you know, when you might think, okay, my life is getting smaller. It doesn't have to. It's a choice. It's absolutely.
No, yeah, it really doesn't have to. It you can, yeah, no, that would be an interesting conversation to have with him. Yeah. Well, Edie, so wonderful to have you on the podcast. Thank you for joining me. Can you repeat your website one more time for our listeners so they can find you and find your offerings there?
It's www.opti-mystical.com. And where that name came from was either in a meditation or a dream, where the voice came to me and said, you're not just an optimist, you're an optimistic who sees the world through the eyes of possibility. And shortly after that, a friend of mine created a meme for me with that on there. And it kind of made its worldwide whirlwind tour. And on October 13th, I forget how many years ago, which is my birthday, a friend of mine, different person, said, Julian Lennon just posted your meme on his Facebook page. And I said, nah, you're joking. No, 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 go look, go look. So it made it to Julian Lennon's page.
Very
exciting. Yeah.
That's so fun. Well, Edie, thank you. It's been wonderful talking with you. Thank you for the beautiful work that you do for the world.
Thank you. And
keep on hugging. You look like a hug mobster to me.
Thank you.
Armed with love. Big hug. All right. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening. Come back again. Don't sweat the small stuff. We are living the big stuff, and it's been a pleasure. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff podcast with New York Times bestselling author and beloved teacher, Christine Carlson. Learn more about Christine's upcoming retreats, online courses, public speaking events, and more at christinecarlson.com and don'tsweat.com.